Thank you very much. Our next presentation will be from Mark Brady, who's going to talk about drug susceptibility prior to preventive therapy.
And my name's Mark. I'm a medical student at Brown. I spent last year doing research on TB diagnostics down in Peru, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I have nothing to declare. So TB has two new challenges that we weren't talking about 30 years ago. One is the emergence of drug resistance, and the other is the emergence of HIV/AIDS, which changes the natural history of TB. Like Dr. Garfine said, about 10% of normal people will convert from latent TB to active TB during their lifetime. But this is about 10% per year in HIV-infected people. And we have a way of stopping this conversion. And that's very important because TB is the most common serious opportunistic infection in HIV-infected people. So stopping that conversion to active TB is very important. And we can do that using a tuberculosis drug called isoniazid. And that strategy is called isoniazid preventative therapy, or IPT. And this is recommended by the WHO, the CDC, and the American Thoracic Society for all HIV-infected people. But not many people are actually getting IPT. Less than 1 in 1,000 people worldwide who are active and who would benefit from IPT are on it. And there are a few reasons for that. Some of them are logistic. Some of them have to do with fear about drug resistance. Some of them have to do about fear about toxicity of isoniazid. But really, the bottleneck is in diagnostics. Before you want to put someone on IPT, you want to be very sure that they don't have active tuberculosis. The reason being that the treatment for active tuberculosis is treating the patient with a combination of different drugs. If you're giving them just one drug, then you're delaying their treatment, you're delaying their correct treatment, but also you might be opening them up to getting resistance to isoniazid. The problem with current diagnostics is that they have poor sensitivity and specificity, especially strategies like clinical history, chest x-ray, sputum smear, tuberculin skin test. Or if you're using a culture method, which is as close as we have to a gold standard, the problem with that is that it's slow. You might be waiting a few months before you get results about that. And so on the scene comes the MODS test. This is what I was working on last year. It stands for the Microscopic Observation Drug Susceptibility Assay. And it's a low-tech, low-cost, non-proprietary free test that was developed in Peru for the rapid diagnosis of TB using, instead of a solid-state culture, using a liquid culture broth. The standard cultures are solid, and they're known as Lowenstein-Jensen or Ogawa. MODS works on three key principles. One, Mycobacterium tuberculosis grows faster in liquid media than it does in solid media. Two, if you use a microscope to look at it, you can detect characteristic cord-like patterns a lot earlier than you could if you were waiting for macroscopic colonies to grow on solid-state media. And three, by adding drugs to the diagnostic test, you can get simultaneous direct drug susceptibility testing. So off the bat, you're going to know if you're dealing with a drug-resistant strain of TB and get the patient onto correct therapy for that. And you don't even need to cross borders to find drug-resistant TB. We have it in California. You don't even need to go down to Mexico to find it. So the MODS test has been replicated in a few different sites. It's been done in Peru, Ethiopia, Brazil, Honduras, Vietnam, and they're trying to get it going in China, Korea, South Africa, a few different places. MODS has been shown to have superior sensitivity compared to solid-state media, high specificity, and increased speed to diagnosis compared to solid-state culture. Here's how it works. You have a 24-well plate. You fill up the first two wells with isoniazid and rifampin, which is another TB medication. And then in the other two rows, you don't put any drugs in. And then you inoculate one sample down a column, as you can see here. So inoculate it down there. And what that does is it lets you get simultaneous culture and direct drug susceptibility testing. So you start with your sputum sample, run it through a few decontamination steps, use N-acetylcysteine to digest the mucus, and then you do a sodium hydroxide decontamination step, spin it down, and then inoculate it into a column. After that, you use an inverted light microscope to look from beneath up looking for these characteristic cord-like patterns, and they're very specific for Mycobacterium tuberculosis. We've done some studies, and we have ongoing studies showing that this cord-like pattern, which you can see here, is even different from the atypical mycobacteria. Mycobacterium kansasi, Mycobacterium avium, there's a few different ones, but it's very characteristic for tuberculosis. So our hypothesis in the current study I'm going to talk about for the rest of the time is that MODS would appropriately assign more HIV-infected people to either IPT or chemotherapy using multiple drugs than other tuberculosis diagnostic strategies. It was done in three public hospitals in Lima, Peru. It was a prospective study, and we recruited patients, and basically for each patient that was recruited, they underwent a battery of tests. They had a clinical exam, chest x-ray, sputum smear, two cultures using a solid-state culture, Lowenstein Gentian, which is LJ, and two MODS cultures. In the hospital, they got the clinical exam, the chest x-ray, and the tuberculin skin test. Back at the research laboratory, we did all the sputum staining and the cultures. For the solid-state Lowenstein Gentian culture, they were declared negative at day 60. For the MODS culture, they were declared negative at day 25, and a patient was called positive if they had at least one positive culture by MODS or Lowenstein Gentian. And we had a bunch of variables. I'm just going to talk about a few here, comparing patients who had active, demonstrated active TB and no active TB, no difference in age. There was a significant difference in tuberculin skin test, although, as you can see here, there were like 40% of patients who had a culture-positive tuberculosis were tuberculin skin test negative. And there was a trend, but it wasn't statistically significant, about having a lower CD4 count and having active TB, which you'd expect. Here's what we did for each of the 435 patients who came in the study and gave two samples. We ran them through all the tests. And on this slide, we're comparing the results from the solid-state culture, Lowenstein Gentian, and from MODS. And the patients who would have two negative tests would be the patients who would go on IPT. You're sure they don't have active tuberculosis, so you put them on IPT. And the patients who were positive on at least one test, you'd say that they had active TB, and they should undergo correct chemotherapy. For MODS, we found that 27 out of the 435 patients had at least one positive culture. For LJ, had 22 patients, so pretty close. On this slide, we're comparing solid-state culture versus MODS by both sputum sample and by patient. And the important thing to focus on are the discordant cells here. On your columns, you have your LJ results, and on your rows, you have your MODS results. And we have the discordant peers here and circled in orange. Take-home message, though, is that MODS found 6.2% of patients to have active pulmonary tuberculosis. This is 5.1% by LJ. And by sputum smear, we used oramine staining. You can also use Zyls and Eason. You can use a few different methods. But only 30% of patients who were positive by culture were positive by sputum smear. MODS also was better regarding contamination than LJ. We only had about a 7% contamination rate. And after we re-decontaminated and replated out the sample, every one of those samples came out. Whereas with LJ, we had about a 22% contamination rate. After re-decontamination and replating, it still was about 3%. So in this slide, there's a lot of data, but I want you to focus on the stuff that's in green. One way we wanted to look at the results was which combination of tests, which strategy would correctly assign most people to either getting IPT or getting full-on chemotherapy. And right here in the middle, we have no screening at all. So because only about 6% of patients had active tuberculosis, we wanted to see how different strategies that they're using around the world compared with no screening at all. So no screening at all, just saying everyone was tuberculosis negative, you'd be right 94% of the time. And it turned out that every single strategy that included non-lab-based tests, such as clinical exam and chest x-ray, performed worse than no screening at all. And we thought that was a bit surprising. And the only ones that performed better than no screening at all were the tests that included only lab-based exams, sputum smear and culture, whether mods or LJ solid state. In terms of time to result, we also found that mods was better than solid state culture, which we expected. But it's still not as good as a test someone can walk in, you can do it at point of care, and it's never really going to be that fast. So just looking for general trends here. These bars are show you the number of patients correctly assigned, which is on the y-axis. And on the x-axis, we have days to correct assignment. And of course, if you're doing a clinical exam or a chest x-ray, you can do that at the point of care. So you're going to get all your results right when they come in. But remembering that no testing at all gives you 94% correctly assigned, you can see that these strategies, although they give you fast results, don't give you accurate results. Now, strategies that included solid state and low syngestion culture gave you better results, especially the ones that didn't include chest x-ray or clinical exam, but a lot of times you'd have to wait a long period of time to get those results, especially when a result, and you'll see some of them tailing off here up to 130 days, that's because after something got contaminated, you have to decontaminate it, replate it out, and that took a lot longer. But as you can see, you're still waiting a lot of time. Right in the middle is where we get the MODS results. We've got a median of about 8 days to positive results, and there were no positive results after day 21. 96% of samples were positive by day 14. So three kind of take-home points about the results. One, MODS was more accurate than currently used strategies for diagnosing and excluding tuberculosis prior to IPT in HIV-infected patients. Two, non-lab-based strategies for any strategy that included non-lab-based tests was worse than no screening at all in correctly assigning patients to IPT or appropriate TB chemotherapy. And lastly, MODS had greater sensitivity, greater speed and sensitivity, and fewer indeterminate cultures than the currently accepted standard low syngestion solid state culture medium. Now, if you want to see standard operating procedures and more about the test, it's open source labware basically. It's non-proprietary. You can go to modsperu.org for that. And we were supported by the NIH Fogarty International Center, the Wellcome Trust, and a few other NIH grants. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. The next presentation is from Tim Rodwell, who is going to tell us about human TB in Southern California.
Take your full 15. Yeah.